First today, New York City's waterfront was once a place of abandoned buildings and industry. Today, it's a vibrant community with affordable housing. Reshaping New York's waterfront was the latest success of the city's Department of City Planning. With us today is the department's senior urban designer, Justin Garrett Moore. He's a professor of architecture at Columbia University and was one of the masterminds behind New York's new waterfront. He may have some thoughts about Kansas City's riverfront as well. And Justin, welcome. It's so nice to have you.
Yes, good morning.
Well, you helped reshape New York's waterfront. Describe it to us. What did you do?
So my role at City Planning is as an urban designer in the agency, which I like to call the sort of Swiss Army knife of the redevelopment world for design and projects. So it's a balance of looking at architecture, landscape architecture, and urban planning. And my role there has really been looking at large areas of the city, neighborhoods or large development sites, to look at how you really both revision how that part of the city is used, but also getting into the details for how do you get redevelopment to work, things like infrastructure, redevelopment, rezoning, and all those different aspects as they go through public processes. So it's a combination of design, but also policy for a given neighborhood or part of the city.
And the waterfront today, Justin, describe it to us. What's there that you like to tell people about?
Mm-hmm. So New York City has over 520 miles of waterfront. So it's a water city in many ways.
Yeah.
And historically, the waterfront was manufacturing and industry and a lot of heavy infrastructure. Over time, that had really declined for a lot of different reasons. And so there were areas that had major disinvestment along the waterfront. But what we've seen now, and if you go to visit New York today, there's really an incredible diversity of new waterfront conditions and activities, everything from new public parks to mixed-use development that includes both housing, but also office and arts and a vibrant mix of uses that we've seen transform in areas over time. So it's, you know, each borough of the city, the kind of the five jurisdictions in New York City, you have an array of unique waterfront conditions, everything from beachfront communities to heavily dense urban conditions.
And to what extent do you think this is going to sort of remake the image of New York City? Because, you know, a lot of folks, I'm just guessing here, don't necessarily connect New York City with the idea of lots of waterfront property.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, the most popular image in New York is the Times Square, the Rockefeller Center, skyscrapers, busy streets. The waterfront really is what we're starting to call the sixth borough. It's sort of the other part of New York that is as essential as sort of the business core of Manhattan or the sort of the brownstone neighborhoods that you might find in other areas of the city. And really the opportunity of this waterfront for making a new vision for the city and a new kind of essential part of the city is that it has this incredible natural resource, which is the waterfront. And a really key part of that development has been the provision of new public spaces. So New York City, with all the density and all the people and all the activity, public open space, truly public open space, is something that is really a great new asset that a lot of the waterfront communities are providing. So, you know, if you go today, you'll see a number of activities, you know, movies on lawns at the waterfront, the use of piers for different kinds of activities, both active and passive, that, you know, really contribute to the city as a whole for, you know, the quality of life and sort of mix of activities that's desirable to a mix of different populations, old and young, the kind of the workers, the old time New Yorkers. So it's really a key part of the city, and it's something that continues to grow.
You know, it sounds like New York City and Kansas City have at least some things in common, and that is we have a great riverfront, waterfront, if you will, as well. We've ignored it for decades here, but now we're starting to we're taking some tentative steps to sort of recapture it. And one thing we've done is establish a big riverfront park down on the Missouri River. What other kinds of things should a city like Kansas City begin to think about, Justin?
Yeah, absolutely. This was my first visit to Kansas City. I'm here for Kansas City Design Week to give a talk, and driving in the riverfront here is really incredible. I mean, it's beautiful. It's expansive. There's really a lot of space for opportunity for different things, and something that you can really think about is sort of that diversity of uses and development opportunities that you have in the city. Everything from obviously residential or mixed use, building new communities along the waterfront. It's an opportunity to really create new neighborhoods in the city with a different product, if you will, for how people can live and work here in Kansas City. But also there's obviously the great start with provision of waterfront parks and open space. But I think a place where you could sort of push that is to develop and design sort of an intensity of uses and programming along your waterfront that are designed into those public spaces. So looking at the design of the water's edge to provide different opportunities for people to actually get down to the water, looking at water transportation and ultimately connecting sort of an expanse of different waterfront sites throughout the city. You really can create sort of a waterfront neighborhood or a waterfront system that can develop and grow over time. And I think a key part of that is to sort of, not, I call the master plan mindset, where you sort of have somebody come and draw a big vision for the waterfront, but instead to really think kind of incrementally for kind of testing what works and what sort of comes naturally out of the people and the interests here for development. So that might in one mode really be focused on, a certain model of development and real estate development, frankly. In other cases, it might be really testing, very different approaches to the use of land in the city. It could be, agricultural or looking at jobs in a certain type and scale of industry. With the amount of territory that you have, you really have the possibility for mixing in a variety of different uses and exchange along that city's critical infrastructure.
We're visiting with Justin Garrett Moore. He is the department's senior urban designer for the New York City Department of City Planning. He mentioned Kansas City Design Week a couple of minutes ago. As part of Design Week, Justin will be presenting Branding and Building a New New York. That'll be at noon today, just 45 minutes from now, in the Center for Architecture and Design. That's at 1801 McGee Street. So if you want to spend an interesting lunch hour, that's today at noon, the Center for Architecture and Design, 1801 McGee. It's always been interesting to me, Justin, that cities like New York, like Kansas City, have sort of forsaken their waterfronts. At least they did for so many decades. What was the impetus in New York City to begin moving back in that direction in recent years? What needed to happen, and what maybe needs to happen here in Kansas City?
Yeah, so the disinvestment that happened on the waterfront had, so many different aspects to it. The decline of industries moving away. There are also, infrastructures that were put in place in some of these neighborhoods. So waste transfer, dumping grounds, things that, frankly, a city needs, and assigning that to waterfronts is something that happened historically. I think in New York, the situation was very interesting in that, the city basically ran out of space. And it became very apparent and clear to a lot of people that in order for the city to grow intelligently and to, again, provide that quality of life that was needed, that waterfront areas were a new kind of territory for that. So much of what happens in cities is the branding and the sort of vision that people have for a city and its identity. And waterfronts are really an opportunity to revitalize in so many ways, in different ways, how the city was going to grow.
I mean, that
So
running out of
hearing.
space certainly isn't an issue here in Kansas City. I mean, we've
Right,
got
right.
more than we'll ever
Right.
use. I mean, it's one of the
Right.
great assets we
Right.
have here.
Right. Well, there's running out of space, but then there's the type of space, the quality of space is something. And so waterfronts, the thing that in New York was kind of important, even though we have a lot of waterfront areas that could be urban, that could be developed, that could be transformed, and that were central, right, that were kind of on people's radar, was really a great opportunity that sort of helped drive some of the interest for investment in those areas. So it's, there's a lot of space in Kansas City, but is there a lot of space that's, in close proximity to your business center downtown, or to your kind of sports and entertainment districts, and the places where there's already sort of success, right? The River Market or different areas where there's traction beginning, those places are going to want to grow and to have access. And the riverfront is sort of a prime space to think about how you sort of build a network of neighborhoods and a network of urban experiences and development kind of within proximity, so that you can start to develop the critical mass, right? The resiliency that comes with having things clustered in proximity. So it's a great opportunity to have sort of a lot of space kind of in the regional scale, but cities need a place of focus, right? People are always interested in gathering and collecting, and places where you have a different level of investment, and that's really, I think, the promise that you have in a lot of the waterfront areas here, that it's literally a natural place for people to collect and for investment to be channeled.
For someone like you who works in urban design, Justin, is sprawl a disease, an urban planner's planning disease?
I would say, coming from a certain context, absolutely. There's been a lot of work recently where, sprawl can be designed in different ways so that there's a better balance for density and where infrastructure is located and things like that. But for, if you look at kind of the footprint of, the Kansas City metropolitan region and how resources, infrastructure are kind of allocated in this very dispersed model, it's very difficult to sustain in the long term. Anybody that sort of drives, and I'm sure you guys have potholes here like everywhere else.
Yeah.
That infrastructure is very difficult to sustain at a low density and a low intensity, kind of in the bigger picture of urban development. So, work that's happening both in reinvestment and the design and redevelopment of urban cores, where there's a different kind of urban pattern that is more walkable, more suited toward things like public transportation, et cetera. That's one kind of a model. But also in the more suburban sprawl pattern, looking at how areas like that can also retool to be more sustainable, kind of in the environmental way, but really in a it's not just an environmental consideration, it's just the pragmatics of how you keep a place functioning over time, everything from roads to schools to, of course, housing stock that can sustain over time without significant annual reinvestment.
Justin Garrett Moore is my guest. He's with the New York City Department of City Planning. He's a senior urban designer. Different topic, Justin. You've mentioned in interviews that there's a lack of diversity in the urban design community. Given that, how did you get started in urban design?
Yes, absolutely. I'm very lucky in a way. I'm from Indianapolis originally, so of a competitor city to Kansas City. And I was in an inner city public school, sort of the traditional, not so great public school. But something that they did at the time was very innovative, in that they had a program where contractors, or anyone that had a large contract with the school system there, would take on interns from the public schools. So I was at Arlington High School there in Indianapolis, and there was a gymnasium addition being planned for the school. And so the architecture firm that had the contract with the school system took on a couple interns from the office. So at 14, freshman year in high school, I got to work over the summer in an architecture firm. And that was really where I got exposure to what I find is an incredibly fascinating and diverse career. It's sort of the mix of the technical and the, you know, science and math, but also the creative and the communicative.
You know, how would more diversity change things when it comes to urban design?
Absolutely important question. I think, you know, cities are, you know, the buildings, the streets, the physical built infrastructure, which could be evaluated in one way, but ultimately cities are people. And how you build the city and how it's configured and what it's designed around is very much about who you're serving, the population, the citizenry. And, you know, both globally, but also in places even like Kansas City, that population is becoming more and more diverse. Mm-hmm. And so having a level of understanding and a level of involvement and participation of people from different backgrounds, from different cultures, in the process for determining how the city is built and administered and envisioned is really, really key.
So that reaching out component you're saying is something that you would that you think needs to be emphasized, and that's something that you might do more readily.
Yeah, absolutely. And reaching out and having the involvement of people is something that as city governments are evolving and even including technology and things like that are becoming increasingly important. People have access to information. People have more access to participation in many ways through technologies. And I think as the planning and design field and government itself starts to evolve, that people will need to have the tools and the exposure and the background to interact with different people to help fold more people into the decision-making process that affects how we all live.
Is the field changing? Is it becoming more diverse, Justin?
Slowly but surely, yes. I would say that there have been a lot of inroads in the design professions to diversify. The biggest way I would say, frankly, has been the inclusion of more women in the design field. Hmm. So it was traditionally a very male-dominated field, and that's slowly changing and evolving. I'm at the Columbia University Graduate School of Architecture, Preservation and Planning, and we have our first female dean in the history of the school. And our first female urban design director in the history of the school. So that's something where there's kind of incremental change happening in those modes. And I think, you know, again, little by little, the strides with, you know, ethnic racial diversity isn't as robust as we've seen. But, you know, there is progress. And I think as more kind of awareness of those issues there are, and the, you know, the more that, you know, cities and development are a global problem that affects all people, that, you know, we'll start to see leaders and influences coming from a lot of different places for planning and design.
Justin, I've got just a minute left. I wanted to get a question in here from Ross, who wrote us to ask, who was the prime mover behind some of the waterfront development in New York City? Was it private development and market forces, city government, the county or multi-jurisdictional government? What happened there?
I would say that the first prime mover was actually the environmentalists that were sort of at work in the 60s, 70s going forward that got the water clean. So that really set the stage for all of this to happen. You wouldn't have a real estate development market coming to the river if the river was incredibly polluted as it once was. So they were the prime mover, I would say. The second dynamic is really a kind of a split 50-50 combination between the market, private development forces, the landowners, the development community, but also very local communities that sort of over time advocated for access to the waterfronts and change in their neighborhoods.
Again, Justin Garrett Moore is the department's senior urban designer. That's the New York City's Department of City Planning. He speaks at noon, just half an hour from now, as part of the branding. His talk is Branding and Building a New New York. It's part of Kansas City Design Week. It'll be at noon at the Center for Architecture and Design, 1801 McGee. Justin, thanks so much for your time. I sure appreciate it.
You're welcome. Happy to be here in Kansas City.
Thanks so much.